Have you ever been riding down the road with your wife in your lifted Ford F-350 pickup truck, and you're eating Whataburger and she has a heart attack in the passenger seat, and these funeral costs are just starting to add up? Well, come on down to Home Depot. We got everything you need to DIY when they die. We got 2x4s, plywood, shovels, trash cans. Welcome back to the Ticket Ripper Podcast. If you're new here, welcome to the Ticket Ripper Podcast. My name, as always, is Ben Kamin, your humble host, the greatest host of all time. Simple.
The greatest host of all time.
And that's as good as I can do that impersonation. And I'm not going to lie to you, I'm pretty proud of myself on that one. It was decent. Well, hi. Obviously, there's something different going on. If you're watching the video, I'm trying this out. It may look like garbage, but hey, what do you want from me? I don't have couches. I'm not going to go buy a camera. I'm not going to go buy something to make it look good. I'll buy something to make it look good when it should look good. Like when I get to the point where I'm just like, probably should invest in this, then I'll invest in this. But for now, you get what you get. You don't throw a fit. And for those of you who are listening and you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, and I just said, hell, my mommy's going to talk to me about that at Christmas time. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, I'm doing, this is a video podcast now. It's a video podcast now, baby. We're a video podcast now. So like now when you hear this, that might have sounded terrible for you. Now you can see me do that. I'm looking right at you into the window of your soul. And you can see me in full 720p. I'm using an app that uses my phone because apparently, oh, you got the best, you got a movie camera in your pocket. Yeah, but the app is garbage, so it doesn't do anything. But hey, I mean, it saved me from buying a webcam that's going to be worse than this. So here we are. And did I just spend 3 minutes talking about that? Yeah, because that's what we do here, baby. So let's get into it. Before I waste more of your time, I'm just going to tell you guys right now, this episode is going to be good. It's going to be a good one. I might get angry. I might get juicy. But stick around. It's very filmy. I will say that. This movie is very filmy because I don't know what I'm going to name the title yet. Because believe it or not, I don't plan this out. This is a massively underplanned podcast. So I don't know what the title's going to be, but it might be something along the lines of, I'm waging war on Hollywood. I'm waging war on Hollywood forever. Me versus Hollywood, a million years. Here we go. Because today I'm going to be talking about, because I've said it before. I mean, one of the movies I've ragged on, probably the harshest, is The Favorite. It's a boring movie. The most boring movie I've ever seen in my life. For what? What was the point of that movie? Did I walk out of there better or knowing something different? Did I cry? Did I want to cry? Was I scared? I was afraid that if I didn't leave that theater, I'd kill myself. And that was... oh, man. No. And... I grew up watching, my dad I grew up watching good movies. Let me put it like that. Really, really good movies. But I didn't grow up watching good movies. And if you did, for those of you who are not watching the recording, I just did air quotes with my hands. But because I'm a genius, when I said good movies, you knew that there was air quotes. And don't act like you didn't. I didn't need to say that I did the air quotes. but I did. Because I'm good at talking. So keep listening. Because this episode, tune in tonight. I'm on a roller coaster of getting to nowhere. Tune in today. Today, let me do an ad for this. Today, we're going to be talking about Hollywood and some of its favorite movies. Just a few. It has a lot of favorite movies. But mainly what we're going to be talking about is the fact that Hollywood don't know nothing. Hollywood doesn't know a thing. And we're going to debunk them. We're going to debunk the system, yo. We're going against them. Because here's the thing about it. I'm fully convinced almost 87% of the people who work in the film industry right now are morons. And it's been going on for too long. It's time to give the little guys a chance. Am I the little guy? No. I'm using my phone as a camera. I'm not making movies anytime soon. However, if you are going to make a movie and you need a zany Mexican boy, I will sell out my culture. I will wear a sombrero. Oh, man. And yeah, if you're watching the video podcast and you're wondering if this is actually how I sit every time. Yeah, it is. I love it. I don't know why. I don't know why. But let's get to it before I waste more time. Today, we're going to be talking about a couple of movies that Hollywood has applauded. Let's call it that. And I've watched them. Some of them recently, some of them not so recently, but I have a very clear memory of them. And I'm going to give you my thoughts on all of it. So if you aren't interested in my thoughts on some of the primo Hollywood movies, like primo movies out there, go ahead and skip. But trust me, I'm going to try to make this as easy for you as possible. Okay? And that's how they say it down in South America. That's a perfect South American person, like, impersonation. You can't tell me otherwise. I grew up in this. Okay? Let's get started. I don't know where I'm going with this. And now I have a camera, so I can just, like, make these faces and just, like, into the camera. If you're listening, I'm so sorry. This is already too camera heavy. Enough. And if you... So now, if you're watching the video, you understand what just happened. I'm showing you my screen. So you get to look at what I'm looking at. And you get to see the way that I flip between tabs like a maniac. Because that's what I do all the time. I thought that this would be more interesting. So anyway, without further ado, let's go. First one is going to be Citizen Kane. And for any of you people who know filminess, know filmy stuff, your eyes just rolled to the back of your head like, oh no, this dude isn't going to rip Citizen Kane. Of all movies, this dude's not going to rip into what people still, and that's going to come back, still to this day, hail as the greatest movie of all time. You can look it up in a lot of things. If you look up, like, best movies of all time, Citizen Kane is always on that list. And don't get me wrong, I understand why. But you need to understand that I'm confused. Okay? If you're a filmy person and you're like, oh, Citizen Kane is one of the greatest movies of all time, bro. I don't care. It wasn't. And I'm about to say something blasphemous. Martin Scorsese, don't come at me. It was good. But the greatest movie of all time? Like, the greatest movie of all time? It's sitting at a 100 Metascore on IMDb. I think there's maybe 4 movies that have done that. And I can't name them all. 100 Metascore. That's how much they like this movie. They. The people. So I've talked about this movie before because I started it a long time ago when I first subscribed to HBO. And I was like, the first 10 minutes, right off the bat, first 10 minutes is they're just like, mercy, we're gonna show you what it's really like
none of these are verbatim words, but there's just like, "Man, see Citizen Kane, Charles Foster Kane, the man, the myth, the legend. He made money and he was kind of a jerk. But look at this house. Look at, man, see." And that's it. That's the first 10 minutes of the movie is them explaining to you who Charles Foster Kane is, which, don't get me wrong, like, people have done that before. Like, there have been, like, movies that start off with, like, newsreels or anything like that, but that's literally what it was. And then it's like what it is the opening of the movie is you're watching a documentary about Charles Foster Kane because he just died. And they're like, I guess they're going to release the movie or anything like that. But afterwards, they're like, you know what? Like, this isn't good enough. Like, everybody knows about Charlie Kane, but we need to know what's up with a Rosebud. Because when he died, he said Rosebud. He just said the word Rosebud. And so they were like, whoever this Rosebud was. Oh, and I just spit. They're like, whoever this Rosebud was, she might have been one mighty fine woman. And so they're trying to figure out who or what is Rosebud. And that's what the entire movie is. And good premise right off the bat. When I say that I understand why people think or say that this is a good movie, I've said it a million times. I didn't go to film school, so I'm uneducated. You could probably sit me down for an hour and tell me why this movie's so good. But, like, ultimately, it's... like, I'm not going to change my mind on this one. I understand why people like it. The writing is very good. The acting is very good. One of the things that I did like about this movie is the cinematography, the way that they lay them out. It does have a very classic sort of, like, movie feel to where they used to do this a lot in, like, older movies where, obviously, it's in black and white, so it looks gorgeous right off the bat. Even though, like, this one, it doesn't look incredible because it's, like, really, really oversaturated at some points. But hey, I'm not the film expert or anything like that. There are some shots where they're just absolutely gorgeous. The last shot with the smoke, ugh. But right now I'm just talking physically, and I'm trying not to make this go on too long. But essentially, the way that they line up their shots, there's a lot of shots with, like, multiple people when they're having a conversation. And nowadays in movies where they do that, they will switch in between people. So, like, you'll get one face and then you'll get another face. And you'll be able to see that. But because of just back in the day, like, it was kind of the way it was. So yeah, like, say in this situation, this was a whole conversation that they were having, where they just kind of, they set him up, and have these conversations like this. And young Charlie Kane, he moves around and stuff like that, but the camera for the most part kind of stays where it's at. And these conversations, aside from, like, there's not a whole lot of camera movement aside from, like, panning in or out. Sometimes the camera does move. But, like, for the most part, like, the way that they set up these shots, there is one, which I don't think they have here. There is one shot where Charlie Kane is celebrating with, like, his bros, his dudes. It's a real Wolf of Wall Street scene. And his buddy Leland is talking with his buddy Bernstein or Bernstein. I forget how he wanted us to pronounce it. I don't care. But that scene, the way that that's laid out, it's gorgeous. And, like, having conversations in that sort of, like, frame is really cool. And it's not something you see a lot nowadays. Like, there are, I'm not going to say you'd never see it, because there are people who still do that. But, like, yeah, see here? Like, this isn't something you see a whole lot, where there's just, like, multiple people in frame having a conversation together. And it's something that I particularly enjoy, and something I saw a lot in this movie. But, I mean, like, the cinematography-wise, like, it was surprising to watch, because I mean, I've watched some older movies and they're pretty, you know what to expect when it comes to, like, how they feel, like, how they look, what they sound like. And sound wise, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, yeah, what you expect, really. Just kind of, like, distorted audio and very high tone voices.
I didn't expect for such, like, there was more movement in it than I thought there would be. But also, just the way that they lay out those conversations is beautiful. And I'm so sorry, this is a very visual episode because I'm using the computer. But, like, this scene here, who does this anymore? People don't do this anymore. And it's mainly because of the fact that, like if you'll notice, like, he's perfect. These people are, like, perfectly in focus. This is a sort of aesthetic that Hollywood has kind of pulled away from. They don't like to do, they want that sort of, like, Instagram-y blur to the background now, which is nice. Like, it's a very cinematic look. But this is something you don't see a lot in, like, big boy Hollywood movies anymore. You see it a lot in, like, or you will see it in more in, like, kind of, like, arty people, because they're trying to keep it going, you know? But I didn't, when I was watching this, I didn't expect to fall in love with the visuals of it so much. For the, like, there is a lot that is just, like, okay, like, this is meh, you know? Like, it's a movie. It's just another movie. But then there is a ton that is just like, oh man, like the way that they set them up. That is particularly my favorite part, is how they set up certain scenes. The whole movie, or most of the movie, does have a very Wolf of Wall Street feel. If you got to see, like, the end of the Wolf of Wall Street, I forgot about Jordan Belfort's life. I liked it. I like the way they set up their shots, and it is a more classic thing. So now the story does, like, it's been studied. This movie's been studied, like, in and out all over the times. And the story, like, I'm one of the things that I would say is, like, it definitely sticks out why people loved this movie so much, and why this movie, like, broke, like, the internet, I guess you could say, at the time, which I guess, like, I don't know, like, it like the tabloids, but essentially, this movie, like, look at movies like Gone with the Wind or anything like that. They're very linear storylines. The movie starts at one point, A to B, you know, ends at another point. There are nowadays, like, a lot of movies have taken on this sort of, like, route of going a very non-linear path, to where, like, in this case, since it is sort of a discovery of Charlie Kane's life, they are going kind of back and forth at different points of his life. The first person that they look at, like, you're basically looking at Charlie Foster Kane's life through other people's eyes, sort of like a vantage point thing, but not really. You're seeing different people's, like, interactions with Charlie Kane to kind of get an idea of what's going on and what kind of a person he is, which is really funny because, like, they did it at the beginning, but it was just kind of an info dump. And now it's exactly what it is. Like, when they were like, anybody can read about what he's done, but we need to see who he was, like, what kind of a man was he? Which I like. I like the way that, I would say, like, I don't think that this was something a lot of people were doing, where the storyline kind of goes, cuts in different parts of his life. So, like, at one point, like, you see him from his youth all the way to being old and going broke in the depression. And then the next person that they, like, interview or talk to, you go back to, like, a point when he was young and started at his, like, newspaper, which is how he, like, became, you know, Charlie Foster Kane. Yeah. And I mean, like, I understand, like, so these things, like, I understand why people hail this movie as one of the greatest movies of all time. However, like, I would say that it was definitely revolutionary. I can see a lot of stuff that they were doing that a lot of people were not doing, probably because they didn't care. Like, who wants to read it? Who wants to have a storyline like that? But they, like, it kind of broke, you know, it kind of said, yeah, like, it works. So now comes the part where I'm going to get in trouble. The greatest movie of all time, though. Acting great. Orson Welles, fantastic. The woman who plays his, like, wives, fantastic. The second one who plays, Susan Alexander Cain, Dorothy Cummingore. Dude, she
towards the end, like, she started getting very, like there was a lot more. At the beginning, her character was just kind of like, meh, and I was just like, oh, great, a role of a woman just, you know, being meh, and just the wife, you know, which I was expecting to see some in here, but she had a very, very dramatic role, which I enjoy. She was great. Her interaction or her relationship with Kane was heartbreaking. It's a very interesting storyline there that I enjoy that they experimented with so much. But she did a really good job. The script, yeah, like the script was fantastic. Obviously, I already talked about how the like it was written. And I'm saying all this because I'm going to say it again. The greatest movie of all time, though. This movie was released in, what, the 50s? The 40s. 1941. Like, there's a world war that hasn't even happened when this movie's, like, made. Like, we've gotten so many movies since then. And I'm going to tell you right now. Recently, like in my lifetime, personally, I've seen better movies than this that use sort of like that use sort of the things that people like about this. But I've seen like the greatest movie of all time. Like we're talking all time here. Yo, whoever's saying that, let me see some of the critic reviews. Hey, yo, The Hollywood Reporter, have you seen Life of Pi? And some of you just logged off right now because of the fact. Some of you just hit the X and just said, "No, I'm not doing anything with this dude anymore," because of the fact that he just compared Citizen Kane to Life of Pi. I'm gonna tell you right now. When I was watching Citizen Kane, I was intrigued. I was interested. I watched the whole thing. The first time I didn't because I was, you know. Mercy, and I was like, nope. But Life of Pi, dude, Life of Pi is a journey. Life of Pi is a whole entire, like, when you're done watching Life of Pi, you feel like you lived a lifetime. It, which is really funny because Ang Lee is a terrible director. And I'm gonna say this right now, like, I hate Ang Lee. Like, The Hulk with Eric Bana, nah, bro. Billy, whatever his name's, The Long Halftime Walk? Nah, bro. I do not like Ang Lee as a director. But darn it if Ang Lee didn't make one of the greatest movies of all time. And notice how I said one of the greatest movies of all time. Because there are a lot of really good movies. Fantastic movies. Movies I would put above Citizen Kane. Right now, because of the fact that I did plan a little bit ahead, Life of Pi is the one that comes to mind. Are you kidding me, dude? You watch Citizen Kane, okay? That's your homework. Go watch Citizen Kane. It's on HBO Go or HBO Max. And then you watch Life of Pi. I don't know where it's at. I don't care. Buy it. You watch Life of Pi. You tell me which movie just lifted your soul. Which movie had you at the end just like, oh my God. Like, the funny thing is like, one of the shticks of the movie or one of the things of Life of Pi is that he's like, I have a story. Like, he told me that you had a story that would make me believe in God. And at the end, he says, "So, which story did you pick? The one, you know, the good one, or the cool one, or the just really like real not good one?" And he chose the good one. And he was like, "And so it goes with God." And that's the funny thing about it is like the movie is not religious, but that is something that I feel like to an extent you can relate to, like. Like watching that movie, there is something. I hate the fact that I'm gonna use this. There is something holy about that movie, man. Like there is something, like God is a character in that movie, but he's not like it's not like you're not watching like God's Not Dead or anything like that. Which is something that I've always said about like movies, like Christian movies. Because I grew up watching Christian movies. I grew up watching, like, you know, the Left Behind movies, all that kind of stuff. God's Not Dead, you know, the first one. I grew up watching, I don't know if it's a very good films, Veggie Tales.
I grew up watching the primo Christian films, but see, the thing is that, like, I always said, like, no matter what movie it was, like, there was always, you know, because, I mean, they don't have as big of budgets. I forgot what their names were, but when the dudes who made Courageous, they started doing their thing. Like, these were, like, the best high-quality, like, most high-quality movies that you could get in the Christian community. I think it wasn't Courageous that they started with. It was Fireproof with the guy who was in Left 4 Dead, or not Left 4 Dead, Left Behind. Left 4 Dead is a video game about zombies that you go shooting around, so not the same thing. Kirk... Oh, it's gonna bug me now. But it's essentially the... what was I even talking about? So, like, I always said that these movies, like, they don't... Sure, you can... You may not have, like, this huge budget. But you don't need a huge budget to make a great movie. People have proved that time and time again. There's a director, Jim Cunningham, I want to say. Jim Cummings. I forgot what his name was. Oh, come on. Jim Cummings. Yeah. Jim Cummings. This guy. I follow him on Twitter. He's releasing a movie now. I'm very excited for it. But I watched Thunder Road. This guy made this movie. It's a great movie. I really like it. It's heartbreaking. The story is, like, it's very down to earth. It's very human. But it explores different parts of... It explores different parts of, like, that storyline that some people, I feel like, haven't gone to, which is something I like about Jim Cummings. But he, look at this budget. For $191,000, estimated, obviously, he made this movie. It's a fantastic movie. I'm going to tell you right now, like, obviously it hasn't gotten, like, the big boy Hollywood, like, stick yet, but it is a fantastic movie. And I mean, I loved it. And it only cost him $200,000. So these, let's look at, what are they at? Cover rate? I don't know how to spell. If you're watching the video, man. I just realized that if you're watching the video, my screen wasn't even sharing. Let me show you what I was talking about earlier. Sorry. So Jim Cummings, Thunder Road. He made a movie called Thunder Road. It's not this guy. He made a movie called Thunder Road. It was fantastic. Look him up if you want to watch it. He's also coming out with a new one. So I'm very excited for that. Wow, dude, I'm embarrassing myself in front of the camera right now. I don't know how to spell Courageous. That's how stupid. Hey, man, I failed college algebra 3 times. Courageous. This was one of the, like, because these guys made the Kendrick brothers. They made their name with that. Like, they had a couple of small movies before, but they made their name with Fireproof. That's where they really broke through. And I mean, like, these were good movies. These were the better ones that I've seen. Like, they did Facing the Giants. Yeah, Facing the Giants was the one. Sorry, that was the one that they broke through, because they were writing on that. They were like, oh man, everybody's making movies about football. Let's go. And so they made a movie about football. But they've done movies that, like, you know, they've made money. Okay, I think Courageous was one of their, like, ones, like, once they were already established. Look at that budget, $2 million. $2 million. Look at how much they're grossing. $35 million in the US and Canada. These movies, they made this movie for $2 million. And what I'm saying, what I'm trying to get at with all this is, and I've veered so far off of Citizen Kane, and we're so far into this episode. But, and I'm going to get, don't worry, the rest of it's quick. But these movies don't have to be like this. Like, they do their job. They do their job, definitely. Like, they're a movie with the gospel at the center. But The Life of Pi, I feel like, because I've always said,
Or I've always like felt that like these movies didn't have to be so saturated in that message in order to get that message across as strongly. There's a rapper named Lecrae. He made a movie a while back. I forget how far back it was. Again, like it wasn't, you know, like there was a lot of money like put into it, but it wasn't like the greatest movie of all time, or wasn't a good movie because of the fact that like they put their stuff in like, oh, let's make it look good, like camera wise. But let's not hire people. Like there are so many small directors and small people out there. And I'm sure a lot of them who have faith that needed that just want a chance or need a chance or have all this talent that they could be using for this stuff. They could be making storylines that you didn't even know to experiment with that are still, that could still be gospel based. Dude, I was not about to talk about any of this at all this episode. I'm talking about Citizen Kane. But essentially these people, they put all this money into making the movie look like a Hollywood movie, but writers they skimp out on the writers, they skimp out on the cinematography. Like, so the movie ends up like, sure, it's an HD, you can release it on the big screen, but it ends up feeling cheaper. Even though it is a $2 million movie, yeah, sure, that is cheaper, but there are still movies with less that have a much better, like, more movie feel. Like, it doesn't, it's a different genre, you know? And I feel like Life of Pi is right there. Like, Life of Pi, if anything, like, can prove that to you. Like, I'm not even talking about, like, Passion of the Christ wasn't a Christian movie. Passion of the Christ was a movie about Jesus Christ. Like, if anything, like, that was more of a Catholic thing, I would say. But it exploded because it was a movie about Jesus Christ, and it was one of the greatest movies ever made. One of the greatest movies ever made. I'm not gonna say, like, it is the greatest movie ever made. Because I mean, every movie has its things. And right now, my mom and dad are gonna they're gonna talk to me at Christmas. It's like, hey, tell us about why you hate Jesus Christ. I don't. I hate Mel Gibson. but I mean, like, it was a fantastic movie. It was really well done. A lot of like incredible creative choices in it. One of the greatest movies of all time, legitimately, not because I'm, you know, a faith man. But because it is, like, if you look at it as a work of art, it is fantastic. It's an incredible movie. It makes you feel things. You're watching it it wrenches your stomach, man. But I would say that that is a movie I would put above Citizen Kane. I would say, actually. But, like, one of the, like, if you look at Passion of the Christ, that movie, I would say, although it was a movie about Jesus Christ, I would say that that movie wasn't, like, it wasn't a Christian movie. It is a movie about Jesus Christ. I would not say that it was pushing the agenda of Jesus Christ, like that was not the intent, I guess. Like, if I make a movie about, you know, HEB water, maybe my intent isn't to get you to buy HEB water. Maybe my intent, and this is an ad, oh my god, unmarked water. Maybe the intent is to just show you how the water came to be. Like the founder, their goal wasn't to get you to buy more McDonald's. If anything, I wanted to eat McDonald's less after that. The goal was to show you how McDonald's came to be what it is today, because it's one of the, it's enormous. It's enormous. McDonald's is global. Jesus Christ is global. So these are movies about those, but I wouldn't say that they're movies with the intent of like pushing that agenda, which at the same time isn't a bad thing. Because I mean, like, I know for a fact, oh man, this episode is going to go on forever. I know for a fact that, like, you know, people use clips of the Passion of the Christ in like, you know, sermons and all that kind of stuff. So I mean, it can be used like as that tool, but also like when I watch it, like you definitely get an idea. It's something that Christian movies, like Christian, like, because primarily Christian movies are made by churches, And it's something that churches didn't, they were not going to like push the envelope that far with the story of Jesus Christ. Mel Gibson, because he didn't care, was like, no, dude, like, you read that story in the Bible, that is a rated R movie. I'm going to make it such. I'm going to make you feel every lash of the whip that Jesus got, that Christ got, man. And he did that. And I would say because of that, it does give you a, you're able to relate, like, it makes him, because, like, you hear the name Jesus Christ. I have no idea how we got to Jesus Christ. But you hear the name Jesus Christ, and it's global. It's synonymous with God, right? You know, like, he is the Son of God. But one of the things that I think a lot of people, like, not necessarily decide to forget, but a lot of people forget, was that he was a man. He was a human being. And that's one of the things I love so much about the Passion of the Christ, is he is, like, blatantly human. He is, there is no doubt about it, this man is flesh, meat, and blood. And that is a very powerful catalyst for bringing people to Christ. Like, being able to relate to the Son of God, being able to sympathize, and being able to, like, I know I reached points in my life where thinking, like, where I felt more alone than anybody. I felt more alone, like, than, I felt so, like, just in a void of loneliness. And, like, I had people around me, I had people who loved me, but there was just, like, I felt so lost, and thinking about just how alone on that cross he was, that was a huge catalyst for me to feel comfort, but also to pull back to him. And I have no idea how we got to this point in this podcast. I was talking about Citizen Kane, but you get the idea. Christian movies do not have to be, like, courageous or fireproof or anything like that in order to be effective. I would say Christian movies, because that's the thing about it, is Christian movies, like, personally, I think that a Christian movie should be geared towards reaching more Christians. Like, that is the whole mission. That is the whole mission. But Christian movies, like these, and notice I haven't brought up God's Not Dead, because God's Not Dead is like the David Dobrik of Christian movies. Like, that dude, the guy who directs those, like, listen, you are all gonna get mad at me, Christians everywhere, the guy directing God's Not Dead does not care about you. He does not care about your faith. He does not care about making a good Christian movie. He is pandering your beliefs to your beliefs, and he's making a buck off of you. I want to tell you that right now. The Kendrick brothers, like, they did a solid job. Their movies are actually good. Like, they actually hold weight. That other guy, like, you look at the movies that he has. Like, he has his own streaming service. Like, who does that? That means he has so many movies. Like, he's making money. He's cashing out. And that, I'm not going to get into the whole, like, oh, you know, pastors cashing out or anything like that thing, because that's a whole other thing. I'm going to start a whole other podcast about my griefs with Christians as a Christian. But Christian movies don't have to, like, Christian movies primarily are made, like, fireproof, courageous, all these. I would say that they are, the way that they're designed, the way that they're made, the way that they're written, they are made more for Christians. I would say that movies like Passion of the Christ can, or like, people who experiment with kind of going more of the route of, like, kind of a mainstream feeling movie with a like God, like element to it. That can be more powerful to reaching other people. Life of Pi, like, you can definitely You can definitely pull something out of that. Like, Life of Pi was just a couple steps away from being, you know, a very powerful, like, a gospel movie or a Christian movie. But that's honestly one of the things that makes Life of Pi so great is God is a character in Life of Pi. But Pi is not your standard Christian. He's not, I wouldn't even say that he's a Christian. Like, he is multiple things. I think he's a Muslim. I think he's a Buddhist and a Christian or a Jew. But like, it's a very, like, the movie is so rich because of the fact that Pi is such a rich character. He comes from one of the places with the richest cultures. He travels on a boat in the middle of the Pacific Ocean or the whatever ocean with exotic animals. He gets shipwrecked. He gets stuck on a dinghy with a tiger. If that isn't the greatest movie of all time, I don't know what is. How long are we into this? 41 minutes. I don't know what is. Life of Pi eats Citizen Kane is what all of this is to say. Life of Pi eats Citizen Kane. The element of having God in there, but it's not, you know, like it has no agenda. The agenda was to show you a beautiful story about a beautiful, rich human person. Not rich in the sense of like money wise, like just it is such a colorful movie, like literally and metaphorically. It eats Citizen Kane any day. And I stand by that. I will die on that mountain. And you Citizen Kane people, you can sit there and watch your, 2-hour long movie about some rich guy and how his sled was the last thing he talked about when he died. And I get the whole, like, there's a lot to it as far as, like, oh, it can be studied. Like, oh, what did Rosebud mean? All that kind of stuff. It wasn't the sled. He already owned the sled. So, like, obviously it was something. Bada bing. It was about his innocence. He literally said it halfway through the movie. He gave it away. Oh, if I didn't have money, I would have been a rich. I would have been a good man. Oh, what did you want to be? Anything you hate. Because you took me away from my family. You took me away from childhood. Money ruined my life. Money ruined my life. And my wife is leaving me. I'm dying. What is the thing I'm thinking about? What is the thing that's going to zen me down? Thinking of the last time that my life was good. The last time that I was perfecting Schlag with my life. Rosebud. The minute you ripped me out of my family's arms because my mama had money and my mom was a piece of garbage. Rosebud. So that's all I'm going to say about Citizen Kane. Now, you're probably wondering, why are these other tabs open? Because I have these tabs open and I'm just leaving these open. I keep forgetting to go back to myself on the video, which is fine. We're going to get the hang of this. So the other movie I want to talk about is Crash, because Crash, Citizen Kane was hailed as one of the greatest movies of all time. Crash was a movie that I remember very vividly won Best Picture in 2004. It was nominated up against like Brokeback Mountain and some other movies. But like Crash, have you ever seen Crash? If you have never seen Crash, go watch Crash. It's got Don Cheadle. It's got Ludacris. It's got Sandra Bullock. Terrence Howard. I don't know. I know all of these names except hers for some reason. I keep forgetting her name. That's rude, isn't it? It's got a lot of people in it. It's a star-studded cast. Don Cheadle, man, come on. Tandy Newton. There we go. So basically, with this movie, let me give you the snap. Los Angeles citizen with vastly separate lives collide and interweaving stories of race, loss, and redemption. Okay, so I watched this because that sounded fantastic. LA, you know, race stuff. I was like, man, like, and I was watching it in the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of like all the protests and stuff. I was like, yeah, this movie, like, I feel like this movie's going to come back. Like, this movie's going to make this movie is important now. I didn't say that, but I was thinking it, and boy, was I thinking wrong. 'Cause this movie was stupid as hell. So let me give you essentially like what it is, is there are multiple stories of people of different races, and they like the stories somehow line up. But essentially the like it's just showing like race relations in LA. And here's the thing about it, though. It's as if they say one thing and then try to disprove that thing immediately for all the races. So, like, for instance, like I'm gonna name off some of the things that piss me off the most about this movie. One of the ones was Ludacris. Ludacris and another character, Ludacris's character, and who's the other guy? I forget his name. I don't even know where he is on this one. But Ludacris has a buddy that he's hanging around with a lot. And Ludacris and Lorenz Tate. So they're hanging around a lot in this movie. That's their storyline. And there's one scene where they're walking through like a nice neighborhood in LA. It's like a shopping center. And they're talking about like, see, like, look at all these people like clutching their purses as we walk by. They look at us, they look at the way that we're dressed, they look at the color, like just takes the color of our skin, and they think that we're going to rob them. Like they think we're just some thugs, some thieves. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, yeah, like it's true. Like they, it's 100% true. Like people will make those assumptions based on the color of their skin. And then immediately, like Ludacris is preaching right now. Immediately, I kid you not, 2 seconds later, Ludacris and his buddy pull guns out on Sandra Bullock and rob her Lincoln and rob her Navigator. I kid you not, he's like, man, like people just really think that we're like some thugs and that we're gonna like rob him. Like that's the problem. Like that's the issue here. Give me your keys. What the hell? What the hell? There's another part, like the movie is just so, like, it's so clearly written by somebody who knows nothing about any of these people. There's one scene with Terrence Howard. Terrence Howard and Tandy Newton are married in this movie, and they are driving down the street. He's like a Hollywood director or a producer or something like that. And they're driving down the street. They get pulled over by a cop because Tandy is getting a little handsy with the Howie in the car. And that's all I'm going to say about it because my mommy listens to this podcast and she'll kill me. But Tandy's getting a little handsy. And so they pull her over, or they pull them over. They have them both step out of the vehicle for whatever reason, because of the fact that they drive the same car that Sandra Bullock was driving when she got robbed. So they're thinking, oh, it's a Lincoln Navigator, but they didn't check the plates. The plates didn't match, obviously, and bad cop. And so they pull them out. They have them sit on the sidewalk. Obviously, Terrence Howard is, you know, just trying to stay calm, just trying to, like, you know, cooperate with the cops because he doesn't want to. I mean, like, I don't have to explain to you what happens when a black man gets, you know, like doesn't cooperate even the slightest bit with a cop. Matt Dillon, I think is the actor's name. He plays Officer Ryan, the cop who he's one of the cops, and he's the bad cop who pulls them over. And he decides that he wants to frisk Tandy Newton. And he tells Terrence Howard to just sit there and like not move. And he violates Tandy Newton, like right there. It's a horrific scene. And unfortunately, it's a really real like thing that happens. So Tandy Newton obviously like gets so mad with Terrence Howard. He didn't do anything, like, but then Terrence Howard has like his argument of like, do you understand what happens? Like, because Tandy Newton, that was one of the issues of why this, like, why things escalated, is Tandy Newton. That was the other thing I hated about it, is like Tandy Newton wasn't cooperating with the cop. Because she's like, ah, he didn't do anything, like, you know, all this kind of stuff. Like, and so the cop just decided that, oh, well, this is, you know, now I have the right to do this to you. Which some people, the disgusting part is that some people would say, oh, yeah, she had it coming. No, she didn't. She didn't. And, like, it is a terrifying thing for something, for that to happen to somebody. But then, like, later they're arguing, and Terrence Howard, his character, has the argument, or is arguing of the point of view of, like, do you understand what happens? Like, I was trying to handle this calmly and just cooperate and just get on with our lives. Like, do you understand what happens to me if I would have intervened? Like, it is not like I'm going to jail. This dude did that to you. This dude kills me, which is terrible, because here you are in this situation. Like, the writers literally put a husband and a wife in a situation where the husband has to explain to the wife why. Oh, trust me, honey, it was better that you got violent. He didn't say that, but essentially, like, oh, honey, this is the reason I let you get violated, is because I didn't want to die. The writers are so oblivious. It's ridiculous, because then the disgusting part is that later, and I don't know why they did this. It's a movie with so many questions that I have. Later, Tandy Newton's character gets in a car wreck. I think she's drunk or something like that. She gets in a car wreck. Her car flips over. She's about to die in a fiery inferno. Matt Dillon is the cop who's near. He goes, tries to get her out of the car. Tandy Newton recognizes him and starts crying like, no, not you. Anybody, like, not you. Just let me die. Leave me here. Not you. Obviously, that breaks Matt Dillon. But here's the thing I hate about that. Is that at the end, he's holding Tandy Newton in her arms. This hero. But also, on his face, you know, on his face, you can obviously see, like, wow, this lady wanted to die rather than have to deal with me. Rather than have to be touched again by me. But the thing I hate is that, again, it's this situation that, oh, yeah, like, okay, Tandy Newton, like, yeah, you got violated by this cop, but if that cop hadn't been there that day, you would have died. Suck it up, Tandy Newton. If you didn't get violated, then your husband would have died. And if you didn't get violated, then this cop would have never saved you. What? Like, if this cop wasn't a cop, he wouldn't have been there to save you. What? The writers are so oblivious. They do this time and time again. There's a Michael Pena. He's in this movie as well. And his character, he has a daughter, a little daughter, and he works for, like, this guy works for a lock company. And he goes and, Michael Pena's character works for a lock company. He has to fix the lock of a Muslim character, I believe Muslim or Arab, like Middle Eastern character, who owns a shop. It got broken into, so he wants his door fixed. Michael Pena can't fix his door. So he's like, I'm sorry, man. Like, I just don't have the parts, or like, I forget what it was, but essentially the Arabic or Middle Eastern guy is just like, he's pissed about it. So he, because he gets robbed again, I think, and like terrible things happen in his life, all that kind of stuff. He ends up hunting down like Michael Pena. He goes and finds, Michael Pena's house, you know? And he points a gun at Michael Pena. And Michael Pena earlier in the movie told, I'm sorry, I'm trying to remember this. Michael Pena earlier in the movie told his daughter, oh, as long as you have this, like, I think it was an invisible blanket on. Oh, yeah, that's what it was. He tells him, like, here, because her daughter's afraid of, like, the gunshots, anything like that. And he tells her, he takes off an invisible cloak and puts it on her. And he's like, as long as you have this on, you will never, like, no harm's ever going to come to you. Which, to honestly, like, it's a thing that people do. Like, if your kid's scared, you tell him, or if your kid's behaving badly, it's a Mexican thing to do. You tell him that the cucuy's gonna come, and then all of a sudden, for some reason, the kid's behaving well. All of a sudden, when you're in a Walmart and the kid's acting bad, you tell him that guy's gonna take you, and all of a sudden, that, you know, the little kid's acting a lot better because he doesn't want to get taken. You lie to your kids to get them to be okay or to just calm down. And in this case, he lied to his child. And when he's being held at gunpoint with a very real gun, his daughter comes up, runs out to him. This guy's about to pull the trigger. His daughter runs up, hugs him, and says, "I'll protect you." Something like that. The Middle Eastern guy pulls the trigger. I think he does it like on instinct or accident or anything like that. He pulls the trigger. For a second, you think the daughter died. And the thing, like, and you're probably wondering, okay, like, wow, like, that's a crazy story. Like, you're probably wondering, what could I have an issue with on this one? It is, in this situation, oh, well, don't lie to your child, Michael Pena. Otherwise, some random stuff is going to happen and she and her dummy little self is going to go and try to save you and get shot. Fortunately, it was a blank, or it didn't shoot anything because a Middle Eastern guy's daughter didn't buy him real bullets because she encountered the movie's nuts, dude. The movie's insane, and this podcast is way too long, but I'm passionate about this stuff. The movie's insane, and yet it won Best Picture. Would you like to see what else came out that year that got nominated? So, Best Picture, Brokeback Mountain, Capote, Good Night and Good Luck, Munich. I haven't seen these movies, but let's take a look, because, I mean, I'm sure they're not any, like, better. Like, they're probably boring as hell. Let's take a look at some of these other movies that have been released. Now, if you'll notice, right now on the screen, I am looking at the best movies of 2004 to 2005. This is the year that Crash was released. Right off the bat, oh, what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh, what the hell? None of these are Crash. Well, where's Crash at? Kill Bill 2? What? Harry Potter? What? Serenity? What? Brokeback Mountain? Wait a minute. None of these are Crash. Cinderella Man? Oh, right. Crash is number 18, right above The Bourne Supremacy. What the hell? This is a Best Picture winner. Cinderella Man came out that year. That was a fantastic movie. Hotel Rwanda? Million Dollar Baby? Dude. What the hell? So what was going on? The Aviator? I would have put The Aviator over Crash. Spider-Man 2? I would have put Spider-Man 2 over Crash. Ray? I would have put Ray over Crash. What are you, nuts? King Kong? I would have put King Kong over Crash. Hmm? King Kong didn't win Best Picture. Didn't even get nominated. And that brings me back to what I was talking about at the beginning of this entire episode. And if you've listened to this far, thank you so much. I got to some weird points, man. I'm not even sure this thing is funny anymore. The last movie I want to talk about is Eraserhead, because it's a movie that I've heard of a lot. Like, it's critically acclaimed. It's a surrealist movie. I watched it and I was completely baffled by it. I was like, what the hell is this movie? I didn't understand what was going on. And then I realized, I was like, oh, right, it's a surrealist movie. I just realized I didn't switch the camera for you to see my screen when I was looking at 2004 to 2005. I don't care. It's a surrealist movie. Eraserhead is ridiculous. Like, yeah, visually there are some parts where I'm just like, yeah, cool, this is cool. But that's all it is. It's just like a work. It's like moving artwork, which, to be fair, is sort of what surrealism is. But at the same time, like, that movie, it was just, some of these people who do these, like, surrealism movies, they literally are just like, oh yeah, like, it's like you're on drugs and you're just like, how crazy would it be if there was, like, a lady squashing enormous sperm? And that's literally a thing that happened. And what if she had, like, huge puffy cotton ball cheeks and sang things like, "Heaven, and I'm a dear to me." It made no sense. I didn't like it. It was nuts, dude. And this brings me back, like, this, all of this is just to say, this hour-long podcast, because I'm telling you, I got lost. This hour-long podcast is all to say, Hollywood and the movie people, and like movie, not even Hollywood people, don't know a darn tootin' thing. A darn tootin' thing. There are very few Best Picture winners that deserved it. Life of Pi is definitely one of them. That movie deserved it. The Social Network, I think The Social Network won. I want to say, if it didn't, what a shame. Social Network is one of the best movies of all time. Definitely one of the best movies of all time. Nuts, dude. Hollywood doesn't know a thing, dude, about what's a good movie and what isn't. Crazy people, man. And, like, there's this stigma for superhero movies or hero movies or comic book character movies. And here it comes. Logan did not get nominated for Best Picture. Logan in 2017 should have won Best Picture. And it didn't. Why? Because Hollywood is a piece of garbage. The Oscars don't mean a thing. These awards don't mean a thing. Like, these movies that people applaud, like, some of them, yeah, they're good. But some of them are just like, yo, this movie sucks. This movie's booty cheeks, man. It's like the Grammys. Like, there's a lot of music out there. There's a lot of movies out there. Some of them suck. Your favorites suck, dude. Sometimes I don't understand it, man. I don't get it. And, like, all we're doing is remaking things now. And I'm just like, meh. Get a new idea, huh? Like, make something different. We're not done yet, huh? People don't push the envelope like they did anymore. Which isn't me saying, like, oh, we should push the envelope. Crash was a nuts movie, dude. Honestly, that was a movie that I don't think should have been made. 100%. Like, you look at the people who wrote Crash and directed Crash, 100% white. And it shows. It shows. Citizen Kane was a good movie. It was a great movie. It is by far not the greatest movie of all time. You can study it. You can, like, look at different meanings of it. But ultimately, at the end of the movie, I'm like, yep, that was indeed a movie. At the end of Life of Pi, I wanted to cry. Is Life of Pi the greatest movie of all time? Right next to Logan? Dude, if you don't think Logan is one of the greatest movies of all time, you're absolutely nuts. And I know that's such a film bro thing for me to say. And trust me, I've tried to convince myself otherwise. That movie is incredible. I used to hate The Wolverine, too. It's not the greatest. It's not a great movie, but I like it now. But Logan is insane. Logan is nuts. But Life of Pi. Life of Pi could be greater than Citizen Kane. Cinematically, like, cinematography-wise, it pushes the envelope, man. I like Citizen Kane a lot. But Hollywood is nuts, dude. Ain't no way. I was gonna watch Gone with the Wind. Movie's 3.5 hours long or something like that. You can go to hell. I'm going to take a pee break in the middle of my movie. You can go to hell. If you've made it to this point in this podcast, I love you. Share this with your mom so that she can listen to it. Share this with your Christian buddies, because apparently I got Christian in the middle of this. I started with talking about DIYing your wife's funeral, and somewhere in the middle I got to Jesus Christ. That's what you come here for. Ticket Ripper Podcast, man. That's what you come here for. And now we have a video. Now we have video podcast. If you want to check out the video podcast, go ahead. I kind of beefed it. I'm supposed to be switching in between like my view and your view and all this kind of stuff. And I keep forgetting. We're going to get the hang of it. I'm going to get a tripod. And that's pretty much it. Like this video. Oh, I can say that. Like this video. Subscribe to this channel. Oh, snap, yo. I can say that now. Like this video. Subscribe to this channel. Subscribe to my, like, podcast on whatever you know, follow me on whatever, you know, Apple Music, Spotify. I don't know how they do that stuff. I don't care. Share this with your buddies. Yeah. Watch me while you cook. You can see these little dances that I'm doing. See ya. Love ya. Half of you are my family, so love ya. All right. I'm done. It's over now. Oh, and I didn't hit the right button to end the podcast. So now I'm sitting here like a moron, and it just came up on the video. And I just pointed at this, and it just came up on the video. So now you all know that I'm a moron and I'm an idiot. You probably saw my face go. That's hilarious. I'm keeping that in no matter what. That's the funniest thing I've ever. That's. I'm glad you got that. I'm gonna end it now. Okay. This time it's actually going to end. Okay. It didn't end. Why is this thing not ending?